Hello, everybody. Greetings. It's Peter Cass here. I just quickly wanted to speak to you about syncope. Now, I've just reviewed a study on EM Mastery, which is a PROBS study in the Annals of Emergency Medicine, that proposed a new score for diagnosing risk in syncope, and that is the FAINT score. Now, what was different about this study was that it specifically targeted the greater than or the equal to 60-year-old patients that had syncopal episodes, because they assumed that they were going to be the highest risk patients. And they came up with this score, the FAINT score. Now, today I want to talk to you a little bit about scoring systems, very briefly, a couple of words about ECG.
The definition
of syncope, again, syncope is something that occurs. It's a collection of symptoms, maybe signs, and we have to work out the cause. So the definition is it's a brief loss of consciousness. They lose postural tone, which means they collapse to the ground if they're standing, and there is a complete recovery back to baseline within a short period of time. And we'll lump near syncope in with syncope. So the brief loss of consciousness, loss of postural tone, and the recovery, spontaneous recovery, back to baseline is the key. Now, in young people, back to baseline means 30 seconds. If you're slightly older, it means a minute or so. But if you're not back to your baseline function within 5 minutes, then you've got to think of this having been a seizure.
What are the potential causes?
A lot of causes. Certainly the big ones are the cardiac causes, ischemias, arrhythmias, cardiomyopathies, etc. And there are some other deadly causes, the AAAs, the subarachnoid hemorrhages, the dissections, the pulmonary embolisms. These are really important. And the other causes are ones that we can not necessarily relax on, but they're not going to be necessarily lethal to our patients. These are the neurally mediated causes, the vasovagal or situational, so the micturation or defecation syncope, those sorts of causes. But one of the things we use to identify potentially deadly causes, such as the cardiac causes, what do we have? Well, we have, maybe we see an arrhythmia, there's an abnormal ECG, or we find a new murmur, it may be an aortic stenotic murmur, so on exertion there's decreased cardiac output, or we have a large heart with an outflow tract obstruction of some sort. And then finding the causes such as a AAA or a dissection or other such causes, we have to use the syncope plus rule.
The plus rules, when taking a history, can help us identify high-risk causes.
And the syncope plus rule in taking a history is critical. So, has there been syncope plus a severe headache? Now, patients do sometimes wake up with a headache after a syncopal episode, but a severe headache that caused them to then lose consciousness, we've got to think of a subarachnoid hemorrhage or a bleed. Syncope plus shortness of breath, is there a potential PE or a pneumothorax or an infection or something else going on there? Syncope plus sudden severe chest pain, is this a dissection? Or syncope plus chest pain on its own, is this ischemia? And is there syncope plus abdominal pain? Is this a AAA? Those sorts of syncope plus rules become important. And I go through those in the cardiac course in EM Mastery in a lot more detail. In terms of the ECGs that we look for, and there's a formula I use, which is A squared, B squared, C, W, and wrong QT. So A squared stands for acute coronary syndrome or arrhythmogenic right ventricular dysplasia, so A squared. B squared, blocks or brigadas. C, cardiomyopathy. A squared, B squared, C, W, WPW, and wrong QT, short or long QT. And you can add on to that the ECGs of PE. And there's not a lot of those, but the S1, Q3, T3s, you can get the transition point movement, you get T-wave inversions in the inferoanterior leads, those sorts of changes. And again, I go through those in significant detail in the cardiac course. A squared, B squared, C, W, and wrong QT, and the ECGs of PE. More and more so, we're looking at some of these syncope risk scores to help us maybe risk stratify these patients. And there's been a lot over the years, and a lot of the predictors for mortality and arrhythmia have centered around an abnormal ECG. And what's abnormal? Anything that's not totally normal, I will say, so we don't miss anything. Ventricular arrhythmia history or a history of congestive cardiac failure, and again, age enters into it. Now, in the FATE study, they came up with five variables that spelt out the word FAINT. So failure, so heart failure, arrhythmia, initial ECG that's abnormal, BNP, so looking at heart failure, and T for troponin. So a history of heart failure, history of arrhythmia, a history of an abnormal initial ECG, an elevated proBNP, and an elevated high sensitivity troponin. And this was a study in greater than 60 year olds. Now, in most medicine, greater than 65 years of age is maybe associated with a higher risk of mortality, morbidity. In cardiology, it's around 45. And a lot of these studies continue to say the same thing, abnormal ECG, older patients, and congestive heart failure. And there's a lot of scores. So the OESIL risk score, that's spelled O-E-S-I-L, I'm never sure how to pronounce that, looked at one-year mortality, and they found that age greater than 65, history of cardiovascular disease, no prodrome, and a abnormal ECG are important. The one that I think most of us knew, the thing that started it off, the San Francisco syncope rules, which again, shortness of breath, low blood pressure, congestive heart failure, abnormal ECG, we see the same thing over and over again. And the ROSE score, which came out in 2010, looked at 1 month outcomes. And with the ROSE score, they wanted you to admit any patient with the following. So a BNP level that was raised, a bradycardia, rectal exam showing fecal occult blood, anemia, chest pain associated with a syncope, ECG showing a Q wave, and saturations less than or equal to 94. So we started getting the BNP in here. And of course, the new FAINT score uses BNP. And in that score, they find that the odds ratio of something bad happening to you, the BNP, is around 2.5. All the others have an odds ratio of less than 2. So it's quite a significant marker. We don't do it a lot. And one is, it used to be expensive, but it takes time to get it back. We tend to do troponins now quite a bit. And one of the concerns I used to have was that, gee, this Canadian syncope risk score that came out was going to hurt us because it needed you to do a troponin. And so the Canadian syncope risk score looked at clinical evaluation. So was the patient predisposed to syncope? Was there a history of heart disease? Was there a systolic pressure reading that was either lower than 90 or greater than 180? And the investigations they needed really bordered on a troponin level that was elevated or an abnormal ECG. So they looked at abnormal QRS axis or a QRS duration greater than 130 milliseconds or a corrected QT interval that was prolonged. And the other component of it was the diagnosis that was made in the emergency department. Was this a vasovagal episode or was this more likely to be a cardiac syncopal episode? And this is important because it tended to bring the clinical gestalt into it as well. And when they did this FAINT study, they compared the FAINT study performance to the clinical gestalt, and they kind of found that FAINT was a little bit better, the clinical gestalt, but it really didn't change anything in terms of allocation of patients. And there's a little bit of a rumble coming out in the literature at the moment showing that gestalt may actually be almost as good as these clinical risk scores. So it's important to know about it. The problem has always been with, say, the Canadian risk score, that we have to do a troponin. But I'm finding more and more I tend to do troponins in the elderly patients anyway, because I've been surprised so many times. And so, once again, the new faint score, go and have a read of it. It's on the paper cut literature review on EM Mastery. A history of heart failure has an odds ratio of about 1.6. History of arrhythmia, 1.55. Initial ECG abnormal, 1.58. An elevated pro-BNP, 2.54 odds ratio, and an elevated troponin, 1.85. Now, let me tell you, you're not going to send anybody home that has an elevated troponin. And in this particular study, they found that they either had a faint score of zero or a faint score not of zero. So the negative predictive value of a faint score of zero was 99.1%. So it's kind of important, but a lot of these are intuitive. If the patient has heart failure or arrhythmia, if they have a significant cardiac history, if they have any ECG problems, I'm going to be doing a troponin, definitely. And if the troponin is raised, and this is the problem, when you do the Canadian syncope score, you can actually have a raised troponin and the syncope score still scores low. So you've got to be a little bit careful with these scores. Don't use them to discern who you're admitting. Use them as an exit point. So if you've said, look, I think I'm going to send this patient home, you can refer to any of these scores. Now, the faint score has not been validated externally yet. The Canadian syncope score has been. You can use that score as an exit score, as a checkpoint to say, should I send this patient home or not? And I think this is really, really important. Now, what did they find in this score was a significant arrhythmia? Well, it was SVT seemed to be the most significant arrhythmia they found. And in a study that I reviewed recently on EM Mastery, which was in Academic Emergency Medicine in June of 2024, looked at presyncope and syncope. And so we always tend to put them together, is that they should be looked at being together. Now, that was a retrospective score with some bias associated with it, but that they did have short-term serious outcomes if they had presyncope, they didn't totally lose consciousness, the most common being an arrhythmia. And in that particular study, ventricular arrhythmias occurred in 7%, but the most common arrhythmia was a supraventricular arrhythmia. And again, we see that commonly, a supraventricular arrhythmia, but it can cause hemodynamic compromise in some of these patients. And so lump presyncope in with syncope. Be very careful in how you deal with syncope. Make sure that you do the ECG and you look at the ECG. I've had multiple patients presented to me with a syncopal episode where the ECG shows a definite conduction abnormality. We've got to be careful that we pick it up. Remember the ECGs of syncope, A squared, B squared, C, W, and wrong QT. Go back and review them. Look at some of these ECGs of syncope and make sure that you're very acquainted with them and teach this. And in terms of, I always talk about five things we need to do in syncope. And the five things are in history. Number one, what happened just before? Was there a prodrome? If there's no prodrome, assume it is cardiac until proven otherwise. What happened during the syncopal episode? Was there a seizure? And when you're getting a collateral history from a bystander, a myoclonic jerk can look like a seizure. So be careful. And the most important thing that will discern that is there a postictal period? Do they come to very quickly? Number three, is there a postictal period? How quickly do they come back to normal? 5 minutes, I would use as the cutoff. If it's 5 minutes or more, it's a seizure. If it's less than 5 minutes, usually it should be around 1 to 2 minutes at the most to come back to their pre-level of function. It's potentially a syncopal episode. Have they had previous episodes is the fourth thing I look for. And is there a family history of syncope or sudden cardiac death? That's really important. Now, in the examination, there are five things I look for. Of course, the vitals must be normal. There can't be a postural BP drop. But I look for murmurs or bruis. Is there an outflow tract murmur? Is there a neurological deficit? Has this been a stroke of some sort? Tongue biting may or may not help. There's lateral versus anterior. But I would say that any tongue biting can occur in syncope and seizure. Any tongue biting, you've really got to assess that patient carefully. Feel the abdomen. Is there a pulsatile mass? Use that ultrasound machine. Look for a pericardial effusion. Look for a triple A. And is there a PR bleed? Now, the problem with PR bleeds is patients will have a syncopal episode when they have an internal bleed. It happens during that point of bleeding, but they may not have had time for that blood to track into the rectum. So you may not find anything on PR exam, but be very careful with it. And think of the syncope plus rules again. Syncope plus shortness of breath is a pulmonary embolism. Syncope plus palpitations is an arrhythmia. Syncope plus chest pain is either ischemia or a dissection. Syncope plus headache is a subarachnoid hemorrhage or a bleed. And syncope plus abdo pain or even back pain could be a triple A. We see a lot of these patients. We admit a lot of them. Sometimes it's not a bad idea to put them in short stay for a little bit and observe them. Be sure you do some repeat ECGs on them. And more I'm finding that I do a troponin. Will I be adding a BMP? I'm not sure. I think BMP raised on its own is a predictor of mortality. So maybe it's something that I do consider in a subgroup of these patients, and the elderly are probably the ones that I'd be doing it on, unless I found a big heart on X-ray or point-of-care ultrasound. All right, well, I hope that helps. Go to the cardiac course on EM Master. It'll help you look at some of these things. Come to Cardiac Bootcamp where we talk about syncope in great detail. Peter Cass signing out. Until next time, talk to you soon.